Ross Atkins is general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Ross Atkins joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ross, thanks so much for joining us this morning. I know this is a hectic time, and I've got to imagine that there are still some phone calls being made. Can you just tell us a little bit about the players you got in return for both Sungwan Oh and Jay Happ? And in particular, I'm interested in Billy McKinney and where he may start out in the organization.
Yeah, Billy, we're excited. Thanks for having me on, Jeff. I've still got the Redemption song in the back of my head. That's a very underrated Bob Marley tune.
Yes, it is.
But again, thanks for having me on. But Billy's an exciting player. It's the profile where you have across the board average or slightly above average tools. You can run, throw, play D. Definitely has some power, puts the ball in play, has a good approach, is more unique than you would think. Oftentimes there's a carrying tool or a really defined tool, and that's really exciting to us. It really does increase the likelihood of him contributing in some significant way. And, hopefully there's some upside to it, and one of those tools does become above average. But, Billy's he has a track record. We've known him, since he's an amateur. We've obviously followed his professional career. And in the cases of Drury and McKinney, one of the really exciting things about them is just how long they have done it and where they've done it, at the levels they've done it. That is typically very indicative. And that was a big part of the attraction to us, is that there's never certainty in this game, but there's a lot of confidence and conviction that these guys will be solid contributing pieces.
Where will Billy start out?
Chad,
sorry. No, I was just going to ask you.
I think he's going to join our – he's going to join our AAA team. And, as we get through the deadline and see where things stand after that and sort through where playing opportunities may or may not be, then, we mm-hmm. could adjust. We see him as a major league player that, for the time being, we'll have in AAA. And that's – I've talked about this a good bit, but that's kind of where you want to be when you have guys in AAA that you feel belong in the major league.
Right. It's funny because, I think, for the longest time, but recently at least, we always talk about how, boy, AA is where all the action is, and everybody, nowadays it's nothing to skip AAA. Well, it does happen, but as you pointed out, if you look at a lot of the really good, the good developmental teams in Major League Baseball, there is a lot of depth with their AAA affiliate. There just is.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a 40-man roster that wins. It's not mm-hmm. it's very rare that you have. We were very fortunate in 16 to have had the success that we had. We had no injuries, virtually no injuries. We had incredible health across the board and essentially pushed forward with closer to a 25-man roster. And I think what sustains success, where you're winning year in and year out, you're really going to need that 40-man or, at least 30 to 35 players that are making contributions over that time. The Dodgers are a really, really solid example of that last year and even this year. They've been hit with as many injuries over the last couple of years as anyone, and they've been able to sustain it because of how much depth they have.
Ross, when you guys do a deep dive into an organization's system, when you pinpoint organizations as being teams you may be dealing with, you may be making these types of deals where you're giving away, or I shouldn't say giving away, but where you're trading a major league player, understanding your return is probably going to be minor league players, such as the deal with the Colorado Rockies. How do you go about? And I know this is a complex question, but how do you go about determining the value of a guy like Chad Spanberger? Is there an analytical way? Do you rely heavily on what your scouts have seen of the guy? Because, we're talking about a 22-year-old guy at single A. And, how do you go about sort of attaching a value to him, and trying to get a bigger understanding of what you have?
It's a great question. So we start with a much more objective process that is constantly being updated in a database where it's changing all the time, daily, as performance happens, as injury happens, as time passes, as players age. It's constantly evolving, and all 29 other teams, we are constantly sorting through how we value every player in their system. As we get closer to opportunities of acquisition, this is one of them, the deadline, then we do a deeper dive into the subtleties and nuances of those more subjective analysis. And depending on the day, depending on the time of year, right now there's roughly 15 of us sitting in a room, and we're working through that individually first, mm-hmm. and then secondarily as a group. So, you know, because we don't have a ton of time, essentially what we'll do is get individual opinions quietly and separately, and then compile those before we have discussions, so we're not just getting momentum from the loudest voice in the room, or people are being too heavily influenced or swayed. And then we have a ranking system that categorizes players, so we can understand not only, you know, Chad Spanberger relative to Forrest Wall, but Chad Spanberger and Forrest Wall relative to Brandon Drury and Billy McKinney. Mm-hmm. So we're ranking them across the entire industry so that we understand, you know, the depth of certain systems, the opportunities with other systems, and it gives us a much better chance, I think, to realize acquisitions when you have to know the entire landscape in order to have agility.
How often does an organization in this situation draft according to need, you know, or do you focus on I'm sorry, not draft, trade according to need, or do you focus on best available when you're talking about minor leaguers?
I think that's such a good question, and I think, you know, if you were to poll 30 GMs, I think you would mostly get a similar response. In today's game, I think 75% of the GMs would say it's about acquiring the best talent available. Mm-hmm. And then once you get to a certain point where there are needs and there are certain, you know, areas where you really are weak or you really are strong, you need to factor that in to break ties. But I think now we're getting to the point where we're so strong on the position player side. And believe me, I don't want to take anything away from Ryan Borucki and Sean Reed Foley and Nate Pearson and TJ Zoik and Jordan Romano. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening with our young pitching as well. But we're going to need another 5 to 10 of those names to really feel good about our overall pitching depth. And now the pendulum has shifted a bit with our focus, where we may be looking to acquire pitching when it's just close, not necessarily breaking a tie. But ultimately, if the value is so significant, we'll certainly trade for or acquire other young position players in our minor league system. And, you know, it's really, I don't want to oversimplify it, but, and this sounds a little bit insensitive, and believe me, I was as a minor league player, I never want our players to feel as though they're assets. But at the end of the day, they are currency. They are mm-hmm. currency for acquisition. So the more currency you have, the better off you're going to be.
You know, I found it interesting, the conference call yesterday, and one of the things you'd mentioned as you were talking about, you know, focusing on controllable pitching, was the idea kind of came up of how you balance controllable pitching that you're searching for with the controllable pitching you already have in terms of Stroman and Sanchez and Roberto Osuna, and how, you know, the idea of sort of trying, you've got to manage a window of opportunity, and it's great to say that we've got pitcher X under control for the next 2 years or 2.5 years. But if realistically your core group of players isn't going to, you know, be in full bloom until the third or fourth year, you have to ask yourself, all right, you know, does the ETA of our team dovetail with the service time of this particular pitcher? If it doesn't dovetail, do we maybe look at moving on from that pitcher? And that, you know, hence I'm getting around to asking a question about a guy like Marcus Stroman, who you do have control over for another couple of years, who certainly is capable, I mean, I think still for a lot of people capable of being a number one a number one pitcher, even an ace, if you want to call it that. But, you know, at the same time, you've got to manage his service time, his window of opportunity with Vladdy's and Bo's and whoever else you have. Would you consider trading a controllable asset to get a more controllable asset? I guess is a long way of asking you that question.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I would say is that we absolutely appreciate and really understand the premium and the value of having players as talented as the names you mentioned. Mm-hmm. We absolutely appreciate and understand that that is not something to take lightly. These guys are elite. So having them in your organization is better than not. But you always have to balance opportunity, and it's not a strategy of ours by any means to find the best opportunity right now with any of the names that you've mentioned.
Right.
Our strategy right now with those names is to help them be the best that they can be.
Right.
Now, having said that, and it is a bit vague, but yeah, we can never not consider an opportunity that comes to us.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't feel it's in our best interest or in any player's best interest to market a player that is that elite and of that caliber and has meant so much to this organization.
And just to be clear, I mean, Marcus, you know, like Marcus, there was John Morosi had a story yesterday that said that there was some dialogue with the Braves about trading for Marcus Stroman. He tweeted out a link to it. Marcus liked it. You know, this being the age of social media, I almost feel obligated to ask the question. But, I mean, you're under no – there's no idea out there, is there, Ross, that Marcus is agitating for a deal or anything like that at all?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. I mean, Stro loves it here. He loves being a Blue Jay. He loves his city. He loves his country. He makes that abundantly clear. And all of the things I just said about having that caliber of talent is really important to the organization.
Shai Davidi wrote a piece today on Sportsnet.ca that got me thinking a little bit about, you know, sort of how this, I mean, we are getting ready for, I'm going to call it the ascension of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. We're getting ready for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to become a major leaguer and Bo Bichette and some of the other players around him as well. But, you know, Shai kind of mentioned throughout the Atlanta Braves as an example of a team. You know, you've got Ronald Acuna comes up and joins a team where Freddie Freeman is already there, and there are some other established players. And do you think it's necessarily important that when Vladdy gets here, you don't have this turn into a situation where he is automatically the very best player on the team? You know, and what I mean by that, the idea that you want to have somebody else around Vladdy so that he's not an island, so that he's not the best player in a team for 5 years that doesn't, you know, that doesn't contend.
Sure, sign me up. Yeah,
okay.
that's not easy to do.
It's not easy to find a Freddie Freeman. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sure. That sounds like a great plan. You know, it's just I wish it were that simple where you just decide to add someone. I mean, Freddie Freeman is one of the best players in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That Braves have been very fortunate to have and very fortunate to have acquired the international talent that they have that's coming in and helping them at that time. And, the timelines and projections and that would be – I don't know how we could recreate that.
Right.
Right? You know, I don't know how we would go out and just – to acquire someone like Freddie Freeman would be subtracting players like Vladdy and Bo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great situation for them to be in, and that's why they're having the success that they are. Now, I think that having, you know, look at Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor with Cleveland.
Right.
So that's a team that's performing very well, and they are clearly two of the best players in the game, and arguably they're definitely two of the best players on that team. But they're the two of the best players in the game, and they're 3 years into their career, and they have been for mm-hmm. since they got there. So it can work when your best players. It's really not about having that other marquee player. It's about having a good environment and a good culture that starts with, you know, from ownership to the front office into the clubhouse and ensuring that it doesn't have to come from Freddie Freeman that is influencing and impacting someone like Vladdy Guerrero. And, you know, I'm confident that we will be there where when we do have these young players coming into our environment, it's going to be one that puts, helps these guys, really focus on being the best teammate, focusing on effort and focusing on things they can control. And we're going to be an organization that fans are going to love and appreciate that level of effort and intensity and camaraderie. I mean, we can't talk about it enough in our minor league system, and that's ultimately where it starts.
You know, it
starts always in the minor league system.
It's interesting that it's interesting that you brought up Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor, because my next question was going to be the lessons from Cleveland, where, you know, that team did retool and did put together a young core, and we're still seeing that young core have a great deal of success. I'm not going to ask you for necessarily similarities or differences between Toronto and Cleveland, but do you see maybe something similar happening here in that regard? And where would this team be compared to where that Ramirez-Lindor core was 3 years ago?
Yeah, we're getting close. I mean, our minor league system, I would say the answer to that is absolutely, I'm biased. That's where I was developed, and that's where I learned. That's where there's a lot of us from Boston in this front office, and we have focused nonstop around the clock about acquiring and developing young, controllable talent. And whether that's in the form of the draft or Lourdes Gurriel or trades from day one, and I think now we look at our system that was probably in the bottom third or even below that, and now nearing the upper quarter, and we're not quite there. We kind of need to be, one or two or three where you can say, yeah, you know what, success is imminent. But we're getting a lot closer, and I think the one thing I can say for sure is that the work that's being done in our system from Ben Charrington and Gil Kim and Angus Mugford, the push to provide a system and structure for players to realize their potential is palpable. It's innovative. It's selfless. It's focused on team. And they're doing things differently. They really are. They're doing things that people will look in the game and say, oh, that's unique, or I haven't seen that before. And it's really, really encouraging, inspiring, and it's nonstop. It is just nonstop.